Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What's that?
Marge Gutman.
Well, buddy, I got good news for you then. Because she dies in Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Gutman.
Yeah.
So I'm watching this movie the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm narrating this in the first person present. And I'm thinking, hey, you know what, Alex? Also talking to myself in the third person. I've never seen this movie before. I've seen bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. I've heard that fucking Silver Shamrock song about a million times. And I think I've even claimed that I've seen this movie. I think I've talked myself into having thought I've seen this movie, but there was full swaths, like the entire first act and a half.
Yeah.
I have no fucking memory of. So that was exciting to watch. Thus ends my list of the things I was excited to watch in the movie Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yes.
This is going to be like one of those essays in high school where you don't have enough to get to yes. X number of thousand words. You're like, and anyway, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, was a very much like a movie I've seen previously, Halloween 2. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, differs from Halloween 2.
In short, Halloween 3 is a land of contrasts.
I'm like upset with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's... Let me pitch a movie to you, John. Magical bits of Stonehenge are going to be put into children's masks.
Yes.
And then lasers are going to fire to the brain and make them into snakes and insects.
I'm going to stop you right there. Are there robots doing this?
John, this movie would have robots doing this.
I'm on board.
How is this not the best movie ever made?
Yeah.
It's shocking. It's not better.
There are so many elements of other things that are very cool in this.
Yeah.
There's like a few scenes in particular that are awesome, that are really cool and crazy. But man, this is not great. And I don't, like I mentioned on the last episode, the sort of critical reappraisal that this movie was getting. And that's wrong, I think.
Correct. It is not a good film.
I think there's stuff to talk about with this movie. There's themes or whatever that's interesting, but I just don't think it's a very good movie.
No. And it's interesting. I'm glad I watched it. Like, I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. I guess I hate it. Like, if this were an actual, you know, film criticism podcast.
Right.
Yes, of course I hated this movie. I mean, I'm not an idiot. Okay, I'm not that big of an idiot. I don't understand how it's not better. It just...
Yeah.
From the cheesiness of it to the awful, and if I didn't know he did it, I would say the ersatz John Carpenter soundtrack, except it's John Carpenter.
Yeah.
But you could tell he just didn't want to put in the effort. So it's just a lot of, like, the opening shot is just like this squealing 80s synth or 70s synth. It's like, John Carpenter's doing this one.
Hell yeah.
And just he's putting no effort in.
Oh, I disagree. I think it's great.
Really?
I think it's one of the few things I liked about this movie.
Yeah, but that...
I mean, a lot of his soundtracks are just like, you know, like rewatching the first Halloween, particularly that first opening scene where it's through the eyes of a young Michael Myers. The soundtrack is just beep, like to build tension.
I remember them being more.
I mean, when he riffs, the dude riffs.
Because this movie had a lot of kind of theremin squeals.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the soundtrack was very like the noise you would make to stop a party if you didn't have a record to scratch.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The way Giorgio Moroder kicks people out of his house.
The other thing that I can't believe that this movie disappoints me on, the lead character is so close to being Mitchell.
Oh, he's great.
From the great MST3K episode, Mitchell.
He's so great.
With who's that guy, like Stacey Keach or somebody? It's not Stacey Keach, but it's somebody of that ilk.
Wait, who are you?
Mitchell.
Mitchell was Jodan Baker.
Jodan Baker. He's fucking B-rate Stacey
Keach. This guy, Tom Atkins, who's a little bit of a horror movie icon, has been in a bunch of different stuff, but he is the someone's dad of actors.
Yeah.
Just a face that orders... Moons Over My Hammy. Like, that's what you see. You can hear those words being said as you see his face.
But what I love about him and more his casting is it's because it's the 70s or the early 80s. He's like played as handsome.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just this lump of suet that fell on a mustache.
Yeah.
And he is, I kept calling him Dr. Fuck the whole movie because, like, he's squeezing nurses' asses. He's asking out, like, the medical assistant. He just goes raw dog on that lady whose dad died the previous day.
Heinous.
But it should have been better. The guy goes to a bar on a Sunday morning to watch cartoons.
Yeah. Yeah.
This movie should have been great. And somehow I felt myself. It wants.
Yeah. He looks like the brawny guy was used to mop up old crow. Like, yes. He is just, yeah, he's rugged's not even the right word. Pan fried, maybe. I don't know. But
he just, yeah. Yeah.
Just looking at him raises my cholesterol.
Yeah. No, you know what he looks like? He looks like Canadian bacon.
Yeah. He's like Rosdauer.
He's a Zap Rosdauer type if there ever was one. Man, I don't even know where to start with this movie because there's just nothing. So I guess we can start here. One of the things I really like about this movie is its portrayal of witches.
Uh-huh.
You know,
not just them, their entire season.
Yeah. You know, all those witches that were in this movie?
Yes.
You know, like all those witches that were and the season thereof?
Yeah.
That was, why is it called the season of the witch?
Well, I guess it's more just the... It's not about witches specifically. It's more just the season of them, the way they, the time that they operate, Halloween.
Because there's no witches in this movie.
No. And there's no Michael Myers, which was incredibly ballsy that, because Halloween initially was supposed to be an anthology series. That's initially how, I guess, John Carpenter sort of envisioned it. But then people loved Michael Myers, and so they immediately rushed to make a second one. It's like, ah, I don't want to do Michael Myers anymore. Let's actually do this anthology thing and let's have one come out that has nothing to do with Michael Myers.
I like that choice. I like the concept of an anthology every year doing, but they just drop the ball on it. And I'm going to enumerate a few. How is there not a little kid walking around with a Shatner mask on?
Yeah. Well, I did like how they incorporated it though. That like the whole, it, that in this movie, the movie Halloween exists and the whole central, like the danger element is happening after the movie Halloween.
Yeah.
I thought I liked that.
Okay, wait, I'm going to circle back to that. But just how do you not put a little kid in a Shatner mask? That's the whole thing with the Michael Myers mask is a Shatner mask flipped upside down. You make the movie fun. Like you obviously didn't make it well. Make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to the Halloween thing, if the music from the movie Halloween, it's on TV saying the big giveaway is going to be on after the movie Halloween.
Yeah.
And the Halloween soundtrack is diegetic in the film. It's being played on the TV.
Yes.
And I'm a fancy motherfucker for using that word.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't have your soundtrack be all sounded like fucking about Halloween because it sounds exactly the same as the thing on TV.
Disagree.
That's bullshit.
Yeah, no, I think it's great.
Also, they refer to it as like the horror classic or like the greatest horror movie ever made shit like that. Which, look, I'm not even saying I'm going to necessarily argue with that statement, but dude, come on. That's a fucking self-aggrandizement for your producer.
I think it's the director just being like, thanks for the job, John.
Bing. Yeah, I suppose. Who the hell is the director in this?
The director is named
something with
Tommy Lee Wallace.
Tommy Lee Wallace.
Who's also the voice in the Silver Shamrock ads.
Has he done anything else? I forgot to look him up.
He's been involved with some John Carpenter movies he was an actor in Ghost. I'm sorry. He was an actor in The Fog. He played a ghost. He was the art director on Assault on Precinct 13, one of John Carpenter's earlier movies. He's directed several things. He directed the sequel to Vampires, the late John Carpenter movie.
Oh. All right. So basically, he's not a very good director. He's not a popular director before or after this film.
A little movie called The Comrades of Summer. Oh, he directed the miniseries It. With Tim Curry.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah,
well,
I like
Tim Curry in that.
It scared the hell out of me when I was a kid.
Tim Curry?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was the same way with the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
I still can't look at Meatloaf without crying.
It's terrible. I won't do that.
Oh, God. ouch. You know what? The show's over.
Yeah.
It's just, it's never getting worse or better than that.
I really like the open. The open promises a much better movie than what the movie's going to be. With the weird, like, with the, when you see, like, the close with the TV and the scan lines are disappearing.
Yeah.
Because, like, forming, it ends up forming the pumpkin shape. I thought, like, oh, this is kind of cool and synthy.
And, yeah, and the opening kind of harkening back to almost like a George Romero film with a guy stumbling in off from off screen and begging the guy at the gas station for help. Mm-hmm. Like, that feels like a Romero move. Like, it feels like the opening of a, you know, Night of the Living Dead or something like that. So yeah. It starts off kind of strong. So he goes to Dr. Talis's
hospital. You know what he is? He's Dinty Moore's beef stew with a mustache. That is Tom Atkins.
That's where the movie just kind of takes a shit, because that's when the robot attacks.
Yes.
And that's a weird death scene.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of the way the creeping villains, you don't know they're robots yet. They all reminded me of Ed Rooney from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's basically a guy in a suit, one step behind you, coming at you. But he killed the guy. This guy has run away with a mask. He's holding a Halloween mask, and there's men chasing him. And they get to the hospital, and he's saying crazy stuff. And his assailants have caught up to him, and one of them kills them by grabbing the bridge of his nose and, like, pulling it upwards, basically.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out what exactly happened.
But he just, like, jammed his fingers into his eyes, and, like, something made a gross, wet noise. And then I don't know if I couldn't tell on the when he moves his hands if, like, the face had like the bridge of the nose had changed. But I'm assuming that's what happened. Somehow he just, like.
But that's not a way to die.
There's also just, like, just shoot him.
Or crush his head like they do later.
Yeah. Well, they pull off a guy's head.
Oh, yeah, they pull off a guy's head. But it was just a weird choice. I mean, it doesn't, this is kind of small.
I mean, it was a visceral thing. You know, like, you're just.
But I'm just saying, if you're going down that street, why the bridge? I mean, it's like the one spot on your face that's actually famous for being able to be broken with relatively little harm.
Mm, I wouldn't know.
You're unfamiliar with the concept of a nose breakage?
Well, just that is like the safe zone. Your T-zone is. Well, yeah, you can break a nose, but, like, I don't know anything about how to murder someone with their own nose, is what I'm saying.
No, what I'm saying is you can't do that. Other than the famous, if you strike upwards from the bottom,
yeah,
that
I was
old
say,
80s
thank you.
Trick.
Like, last Boy Scout did not exist.
But fine, if a robot struck from upwards, like Heinz 57, and, you know, you have to hit that direct weird spot of the bottle from an angle up into the dude's nose, shooting the cartilage into the brain, fine.
You know what it is? I bet there's a power switch in the human face right behind the bridge of the nose, because if it's the safest thing, and the robot's strong enough to actually get in there and get behind there. Like when you would put a paperclip in to reset a computer.
Yeah,
it's like that.
I've been watching a lot of House lately, and I'm pretty sure that's right.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's how medicine works.
I think I know a little something about it.
I do too.
Well, so the guy gets killed, and the nurse walks. The nurse that Dr. Beef Stew has already sexually harassed, she sees it happen, and he just, like, pushes by her and runs out. She starts screaming, and Dr. Chalice runs after him. The assailant goes to his car and just silently pours gasoline all over himself and lights himself afire.
Light himself a fire. I like the way you said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, again, that was kind of a cool spot because I don't know that he's a robot yet.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, what a weird thing to happen. Cause,
that's terrifying.
Yeah, well, also, what a terrible murderer, because, I mean, you totally could have gotten away, like, you could have just driven. Just done it more silently. Like, yeah. there's a lot of things going on, but now I found out he's just, like, some automata.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I like it.
But there's a lot of decisions about the way these automata work that are confusing.
Well, actually, that's what I liked about them a little bit, that, I mean, totally skipping around, we'll get to it later, but, like, there's scenes where, like, they could catch Doctor whatever and Lady, and they don't because, like, essentially they're not programmed directly to do that. So they're just sitting there kind of hive-minding, like, just minding their own. And as silly as that is, I kind of liked it as, like, a character choice of... Yeah, they're shitty robots. Like, because you know, you wouldn't. It's the fucking 70s. They can't make that good of robots.
Right, and they're mainly like clockwork more than. I mean, I guess there's wires and circuitry in them, but I just took them more as like wind up dudes.
And did they talk?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. So I'm kind of all right.
They sneeze.
Oh, that's right. There was a they actually made a big point of that.
Yeah, because they're very lifelike, but they don't talk.
Okay, so let's
Wait, one of them talks, because in the factory, I think one of them talks. But was he a robot? Are any of us? Westworld season 3. Anyway,
I can't wait to find out, and then find out what I found out wasn't true. Here's where the first kind of plot thing breaks down, and I'm not going to pick on all the little tiny things, but like there's some major plot stuff we should point out. How the hell did... All right, so Ellie's father is the guy that we get introduced to that gets killed.
Yes.
In the hospital.
Yeah.
Bed. We're going to have to go out of order near the plot here, but presumably he escaped from the Silver Shamrock factory.
Yes.
Holding a mask.
Well, he was there because he was staying in the hotel that they ended up staying at. But yeah, he got a mask out of... He figured out what they were up to.
But then he ran all the way back to to wherever the hospital is, which is not near the Silver Shamrock factory.
No, he just ran to the gas station, and the gas station called them. Called the hospital. Like, they didn't... Because, in the town later, all the automaton just take the
But that's meaning, isn't it established that that town is kind of run by Silver Shamrock? So yes. Why would this gas station call...
He's outside of town.
See, okay, yeah, I get that he's outside town. I guess it just, their trip to Silver Shamrock felt like it was like a day trip. Like, it took a while.
It took a while. But, like, so this is the thing that I love. So they go, the daughter of the murdered guy shows up, and Dr. Chalice, having seen that weird shit is afoot, she mentions weird shit is afoot. So he's, like, immediately, like, let's go investigate. Just calls his wife on the phone. And it's just like, hey, baby, I got a medical thing. Shut up. Bye. And then, go fucks off for the weekend.
You skipped probably the most important character choice in this movie. He doesn't just call his wife and say, oh, I'm going to a medical conference. No, I don't remember the hotel. He's carrying a six-pack.
He's got a six-pack. Yeah, just sitting on the payphone. Yeah, because he's such a piece of shit.
But I also kind of love him. But what I mean to say is, I don't understand the geography of the movie. So let's pretend... Dr. Dinty Moore's lab is in Portland, Oregon, where we're currently recording. It seems like they drove to Salem, Oregon, although very close.
Mm-hmm.
So in Salem, Oregon, the previous night or a few days previous, the dad stumbles out of the factory carrying this mask into a gas station.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, you know what we should do is get him to Portland. It's just the geography of it.
But also, you're just assuming that he ran all that way. He could have been in a car at some point.
No, but his car is in the Silver Shamrock factory. They show it later.
Yeah, they could have reclaimed it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're positing a longer kind of...
Yeah.
This does matter later. It's just because this is a very powerful organization. They are the largest mask manufacturer on the planet. They also have magical occult powers.
Mm-hmm.
It seems strange that there's this... Well, within walking distance, never heard of it, don't know what the fuck this is. It just, there's this weird wall that happens between the world of Dr. Easy Made Stew and the world of the Silver Shamrock Factory.
Yeah, no, it's just convenience, basically.
Yeah, okay, so he basically just finds... I also love... So her dad's dead, and she approaches him to meet up. Doesn't she find him in that bar where he's watching cartoons?
Yes.
That's where she recruits him. So he's in a bar on a Saturday morning, Sunday morning, watching cartoons in the morning, drinking.
Yeah.
And the people at the hospital go, oh, yeah, here's where you'll find him.
Well, you know why? Because he can't get... He just wants to watch the fucking game, but it's too loud at home with his wiener kids. So he's got to take some time to himself. Because he's watching cartoons, but he's like, can you just come on? Yeah. Change the channel.
Incorrect, though.
Oh, no, because the Halloween commercial comes on.
The third try they get to the game. Because, again, I love this bar, by the way.
Yeah.
They're hanging out on a Sunday morning during an NFL season.
Mm-hmm.
They're watching cartoons first, flip the channel to something else, and then flip the channel to a third choice, and then finally, fine, we'll watch the most popular thing to ever happen within bar confines. Again, just love that bar, love him. I want to get drunk with him and just angrily grumble without saying any words. Because, he's one of those guys that can say, yeah, right,
well. I went to my high school reunion and I ran into a few of those guys. A lot of ex-wife talk.
Yeah.
A lot of ex-wife talk.
Well, this guy has an ex-wife. We meet her in the film.
Well, no, they're still married.
No, he refers to her as his ex-wife. I think this is just a poorly written script.
Mm.
When he's talking to the cops after the dude gets murdered in the hospital, he says, oh, yeah, my damn ex-wife.
I assumed they were still married.
You know, in the first scene, you have every reason to assume that because that's what it seems like. But apparently he's got custody of the kids every, you know, yada, yada.
Okay.
Well, also, that man shouldn't be allowed to have custody of kids because he shows no, zero caring that his kids are about to have laser maggots going
into
his brain.
Well, no, he does. That was his first call.
Yeah, no, because he put a lot of effort into it in that he didn't call back, make his point, or make something else up. Like, seeing as a doctor, he could say, oh, there's toxosmukma in the mask. Yeah. Make sure the kids don't wear it. You know, there's other medical mumbo-jumbo.
But as the doctor, he also had to do the greater good.
Letting his children die. Yeah. And everybody in three time zones.
Yeah. So it's funny. The whole time I thought he was married, I just thought he was totally just like, whatever, lady, I got a doctor thing, I don't care. I thought it was just like a total deadbeat dad instead of being a divorced deadbeat dad.
Yeah, he's legally less of a scumbag. Right. Yeah, like according to all the laws of tort.
But he and Ellie, the daughter of the murdered man, go to investigate the masks, see if that's exactly where her dad was. And I'm not sure at what point they introduce his
Marge Gutman
Oracle. Oh. I don't know the name, but the redheaded doctor that he calls occasionally to like run tests for him or whatever.
So she gets introduced before they go on their trip. He basically says he calls. Wait. No, she gets introduced over the phone. He calls her and says, "Hey, what's up with the autopsy?" She's like, "Hey, it's not done. I'm just an assistant." And he goes, "Oh, come on, babe. I'll come back and, you know, I'll put three fingers in you if you do this for me." And she's like, "Oh, all right. I'm going to fall prey to your inexplicably sexy ways." Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Yeah, I'll do that." And then he calls back again. And that's when the kind of the subplot of her realizing that there's no, which, oh, actually, I really did like this. Her saying, "Ah, you know, they screwed up. They messed up. They swapped the envelopes. Because what we thought was charred flesh was actually just bits of automotive parts."
Yeah.
Because we don't know the robots yet.
Yeah.
And as shitty as this movie is, that's a really well-done slow
play. No, I like that little slow release of that. Yeah.
Because having not seen the movie before, because honestly, didn't know there were robots in it. I had no idea where that was leading. And then it was the reveal of robots later and her finding basically springs with little like springs with a little sign saying this is for a robot. That, but yeah, it was a good slow play. But that's where the assistant mortuary coroner was introduced,
because he's just got this apparently just like a bevy of ladies that he can just call.
Well, that's why I kept calling him Dr. Fuck. Yeah. It's, yeah, I mean, he's
what
just
a greaseball.
Well, it was the 70s. He had a mustache. Yeah. You know,
that's all you needed.
He has a doctor and a mustache. He had some kind of like 19-foot Oldsmobile. What more do you need?
So they go to, I don't even remember the name of the town, but they basically just get into H.P. Lovecraft in Smith territory, because here's this weird town where everyone's acting strangely and treating the outsiders weird. And they go to the hotel, like seemingly the only hotel, and they pull up, and this old Irish guy's like, "Oh, of course we've got a room here, too, ta too." And he's showing them around the inside of the hotel room. And then Beef Stew's like, "Hey, keep him busy. I'm going to go check something." And she keeps him busy while he goes and signs the guest book. Like, that's his big sneaky plan, is it he is. Signs the guest book and leaves money for the room. Whoo!
Because the thing is, he does check the guest book to make sure her father had stayed there. But yeah, the entire subterfuge, not needed.
There's no reason. And then he comes back and tells him what he did. He's like, "Oh, I just signed the guest book and that."
It is. And also, I can't stress enough how relaxing it is for me. I am someone that talks like this every now and again to finally listen to a movie that their Irish accents are worse than mine. Because the Irish accents movie fucking suck.
Great. Well, the one guy actually is Irish.
No, the one guy was fine. But the lead dude, the lead villain guy, he put no effort into an Irish accent.
Well, he's got like a more of a Christopher Lee thing going on.
But but when he gave his big speech, which we're going to reenact later.
Oh, no.
There's like seven words of that. There's half a bro gone. Like, it is shit on toast.
Is he actually Irish?
He might. Maybe he's doing like a subtle Irish, But boy, does it not sound
his
like
name's
it.
Dan O'Hurley. He's Irish born.
Yeah, fine. But his accent is not there. Like, I think maybe he was trying to do an American accent and his American accent failed a few times. So it's accidental Irish. But oof.
I know. He's the old man from RoboCop. So he always.
Oh, my mistake. His Irish accent's great.
Then he's fine.
Yeah. So they're at the motel. And I don't remember if it's before or after they meet Marge. Marge Gutman.
Well, so. They meet the rest of the characters of this movie at this point, because while he's walking back from his subterfuge, a big Winnebago pulls up, flinging a bike off that almost kills him, and you meet the
Gutmans.
I thought Marge Gutman was the one that owned the
I don't know. I just love Marge Gutman. Oh yeah, that's the Winnebago family. Oh yeah, they're different. Marge Gutman.
Which I love that they're supposed to be. So it's like the Kupfer, Buddy Kupfer, and his family. They show up and they're supposed to be like gauche and annoying, and they're supposed to be able to tell it by the way they dress. They dress like people in Portland now, yeah. like mom is in a pantsuit and big giant ugly glasses. Dad is wearing a bucket hat and a dumb blue velvet sweater.
The kid's an obnoxious shithead on a bicycle. It's that's just like, not obeying the rules of the road.
I'm glad we came full circle on these awful people. And then you meet Marge Gutman, who just pulls up to the hotel and starts shouting at Ellie.
She's the best.
About, like, oh, the factory, and this is all terrible, or whatever.
Yeah. Because, oh, are you here to pick up your order, too? They're not letting up.
No, she does not ask. She asks later, immediately just starts yelling at a stranger about a factory.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, all the small town people, they're not allowed to pick up their orders anymore. This big. Also, I just love the fact that they're the number one mass manufacturer in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Again, no one's ever heard of them, a few miles away. But also, their big toy light, their big light is three shitty masks.
Three masks.
Yeah, it's a dumb pumpkin head, a skull face, and what's the third one? Is it a witch?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that must be the
For
witch.
Girls.
The season of the witch.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So that's when they have their the most disgusting foreplay I've ever seen in my life.
Is that what that was?
He sucks at her teat.
Well,
in a
there's Bill. He doesn't just launch into that. There's this whole like, I don't, I can sleep in the car if you're not cool with it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And there's like this half-hearted.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah, no, it's fine. We'll just stay here. They pretend to be husband and wife for some reason. And yeah, then they start banging.
It is gross. And then they're done. They're in post-coital bliss. He's you can see the beef stew sweat coming off of him. And she's ready to go again. And
he's
says,
bummed out about
and
it.
And he goes, how old are you? And she's like, oh, I'm older than I look, etc. But this movie took time to point out that an older, slovenly gentleman is having a hard time getting his dick hard for the really hot woman in his bed.
Well, he also, earlier, before this even happened, he was like, well, we should go grab a drink. Yeah, but then no, they banged, and then he's just like, oh, I'm not drinking, though. This sucks.
No,
so,
what he says, she says we should investigate. He's like, nah, let's just get a hotel. I feel like having a drink.
Yeah.
We also missed when he's coming back to the hotel, and this might be slightly out of order, but he runs into a bum from the 1920s.
Well, yeah, well, he basically runs into, again, this H.P. Lovecraftianism thing. He basically runs into Zadok Allen. Like this
oh, boy, old, do I not. I don't like H.P. Lovecraft in the slightest.
Well, he's a character in Elizabeth that basically lays down, here's what's weird about this town. Gives a whole bunch of backstory because he's plied with drink.
Got it.
Same thing. Like, same exact thing happens in this, where he's just like this bum. Because, of course, he's walking back from the liquor store in this tiny town through this weird alleyway. And this bum's like, I ain't got no diseases. Let me hit off that. He's just like, let me tell you, this factory, it's weird, and I got fired, and he's watching us now. Colonel Connell Cochran, the head of Silver Shamrock, is watching us now. He can go to hell. And then gets murdered.
Yeah, he gets murdered by one of the robots. Yeah. The robots rips his head off.
Yeah. Although I did like, so before, the whole town is under a curfew, which I like that, like where there's just this announcement. It's all kind of friendly. It's like, hey, it's time for a curfew. And
do you know whose voice that is?
Who's a
Jamie Lee Curtis?
I thought she was just the operator. Oh,
she's the it's 6 p.m. get home.
At least, okay.
According to one website I looked at,
I know she's definitely the operator on the phone. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if it was the same voice.
I didn't do a lot of research because I would be researching Halloween 3.
Right,
Season of the Witch.
I can't be bothered. Yeah, so then this bum just gets murdered. Like, the two Ed Rooney robots just find him and yank his head off. Again, just shoot him. Just...
Yeah.
Just...
Well, oh!
Karate chop his brain. On like, that note, whatever.
So, he's walking back to the hotel room to go back to Pound Town with Ellie. And the thing he maybe. Does before that is share a bottle of booze with a homeless
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
The fuck is wrong with this
dude? He's disgusting and awful and thoughtless.
Well, maybe this whole movie isn't... Like, maybe this is like a... You know, kind of a delirium tremens. Like, there's actually nothing going on here. This is this man's just hallucinating this entire
He's
fucking
trying
thing.
Trying to dry out.
Which is why it makes absolutely no fucking sense.
Yeah. Well, there's a point, there's a scene here also. While he's busy swapping spit with a hobo, there's a scene where it's Ellie getting out of the shower. And this
oh,
is
that was
not,
really awkward.
It's not just for titillation. It's to show that she's an absolute moron that doesn't know how a towel works. Because she steps up, puts a towel around her, and then really goes to the gross bed sheets and wraps those around her. That's it. That's the scene.
I don't understand what was happening. One, I'm reasonably sure you could see her vagina, which was a weird choice for a movie with no boobs. Two, I don't understand what was happening there.
No, it was
she cold?
Yeah, it was just like it was just a way to be like, hey, here's some skin. Folks, I
but
guess.
Why would she wrap
but it doesn't. Yeah, why would she wrap gross hotel? Like, dry yourself off, first of all. But then, yeah. And I don't know if it's something where there was a discussion of, well, later when he shows up and she's wrapped up in the sheets, we got to know how she got it. We don't know
but,
how that happened.
But here's what makes it even weirder. When he shows up, she's wrapped up in sheets and then reveals herself to wearing a black nightie.
Mm-hmm.
So they set up she's naked under the.
So you're suggesting there's magic involved and she's in on it. I like this read. Look, go with it.
Honestly, as far as the magic works in this movie, that would make more sense than a lot of what's
not?
Happening.
It was just, it made me so, like, I've seen a lot of Dateline NBC. I know how hotel sheets are. Don't wrap those around your body. That's
disgusting. No, you throw it on the floor immediately.
Yeah.
So in the morning, they go to the Silver Shamrock Factory.
Yeah, that was, again, just a minor thing, but it drove me nuts. So he comes back and is, like, talking to her about, like, well, okay, we got to go investigate it. It's weird. And then it just, they're sitting on the bed. She's sitting on the bed. He's sitting on a chair. And then it just dissolves to them in the morning, asleep in those positions. Then it cuts to morning at the factory. And like, I think I might, maybe even with the date. There's bottom text in this movie that drives me crazy.
Yeah. And they skip days, which annoyed the crap out of me.
What annoys me is the way they'll do it. So that, they don't say every day, but they also, because there's a clear countdown happening. Well, I guess you don't know that at first, but like there's apparently kind of happening.
No, I think you do, because I'm pretty sure it's 8 more days till Halloween, Halloween.
Which, I like how they just used that song because it was in the public domain. Like, rather than write something new, they just went like, yeah, I'll just reuse that.
What, you're saying John Carpenter didn't want to just, you know, hump a theremin for 8 seconds and pretend it's music?
Yes.
Okay.
That's bad. Like, he should. He should always be doing that. But at the beginning, when the guy is running away from the villains... when it goes to the gas station, little Chiron comes up and says, 1 hour later.
Yeah, that was weird.
Why do I need that information? Like, what? Okay.
I
don't know if that's to help establish your distance issue where it's like, no, he went a long way to get to this gas station. That's why it's closer there. But it was just like, okay, what?
Yeah, it was, the dating thing was weird. The timing thing, a lot of the kind of geography and the temporal dynamics of this film don't make sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's we haven't even gotten to the bits of Stonehenge yet.
Right.
So the next day they go to the Silver Shamrock Factory and she asks about the order that her father was picking up there because her father owns the local toy store in whatever town that Dr. B. Stu lives in. And there's a weird thing where they're like, oh, let me look up that order slip. And they're like, that order slip went out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really just awkward investigation.
Just doing office stuff.
But here's where the best part happens. The Winnebago family shows up.
Yes.
Turns out they're the number one salesman of all those three masks across the United States. And we find out some backstory about Mr. Cochran. Because you know he's a jokester, John.
Yes, famous practical joker.
Hey, John, do you happen to know some of his inventions from the past?
Very racist thing of Indians playing a drum?
No, in fact, he invented sticky toilet paper, the dead dwarf gag, the soft chainsaw.
Yeah.
Let's just stop there for a second.
Yeah.
Sticky toilet paper. I mean, I guess I could see there being a gag there. So, you know, oh, that's funny. It's like fly paper, but it's now stuck to your hand and your bottom. You know, I don't know what a bottom is, but it's a word I said.
But it's there.
And then you skip to the end. The soft chainsaw. Some kind of, oh, I'm attacking you, but it turns out it's just making a noise and it's soft.
It's mainly a lumberjack joke, I think.
The dead dwarf gag.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just...
No, just don't. No, I want to just imagine.
Now let's... What do you think, for the rest of the episode, what do you think the dead dwarf gag could possibly fucking be?
It sounds like a con that Paul Newman runs in The Sting. Like, then you hit him with a dead dwarf gag, and then I hit him with a Jersey backside.
No, it sounds like a con that Paul Newman did in The Hustler.
In The Sting 2.
Or it sounds, no, we're both wrong. It sounds like a con that Paul Newman would do in The Color of Money. I just realized Paul Newman played one part his entire career.
That's it.
Also, he made popcorn. I cannot for the life of me, I sat there thinking about it. Not so much to type it into Google and do any research of what the fuck a dead dwarf gag could possibly be.
I think it's just, these are three funny words when you put them together.
Yeah, but let's make it a little bit darker. Mm-hmm. Or is it a gag for a dwarf that used to be alive?
But why would you need to gag a dead dwarf?
No. What I'm saying is you choke it to death. It used to be a live dwarf.
Right. So you're saying he invented a thing specifically to strangle dwarves. Okay.
Hey, Johnny's from Ireland.
That's true. Well, and also his version of...
Where are the leprechauns, John?
Jokes. Well, those aren't dwarves. His version of jokes are not good.
Wait,
they are. They include child murder.
Yeah. Well,
That wacky pastime of
the murder. The children love a trick. You know, he says yes. That in his big speech, which we're going to do later. The dead dwarf guy. Anyway... John, what happens next?
Well, so this actually—I'm
just gonna.
This is like one of the few I mentioned earlier. Like, there are some awesome scenes in the movie because they go through the whole thing of like touring the factory and the kid wants a mask and Colin Cochran's like, oh, it's got to go through special processing and whatever. It's just exposition. And what's her face? Your favorite person, Marge Gutman.
Marge Gutman
is.
My name's Marge. Marge Gutman
is complaining to Ellie about. The mask and I got to get this new shipment from the factory. It's terrible because like the tag, the giant silver shamrock tag on the back of the mask keeps falling off. What shoddy workmanship. Yes, I care deeply about the brand on my Halloween mask. That thing that everyone, you know, I need that Nike swoosh on that pumpkin.
But this actually is a deeper point. You would think, from Cochran's point of view, that is pretty shoddy workmanship.
Yeah, sure.
That's the totality of the point of opening of selling these masks.
I don't disagree that it is shoddy workmanship. I'm saying that's a bizarre plot point because who cares? Of Halloween mask, like I guess I've never really thought of it, Halloween masks as like a designer item. You know, it's just like, oh, that one looks cool. I'm gonna be a pumpkin.
Well, I think what you're also skipping over is the more important dumb part of this is it's 2 days to Halloween at this point. Why are you trying to track down your Halloween mask shipment? Yeah. I'm pretty sure the thrust of Halloween mask sales are well in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
In fact, Winnebago family is trying to get his shipment for next year,
right.
Which is, I've never been.
No one says Marge Gutman was good at business. Like,
John, I've taken a lot of shit on this show. But
I'm
if
sorry.
You dare besmirch
the evidence is here.
Of Marge. But Marge Gutman.
So one of the cool scene happens with Marge Gutman is she's looking at this tag and notices there's like a microchip in it. And she's poking around in it, and then like all of a sudden, just boom, laser shoots out.
Laser just blows her face off.
Blows her face off. And the makeup effects are pretty cool. Like it's like
cool.
It just splits her face all weird and then bugs start crawling out and it's very upsetting.
And it cuts to another scene of our hero being really, really empathetic. Ellie goes, what was that? He goes, who cares? And then it just goes back to humping.
If it's not booze, cooked pork, or boobies, don't care.
You know I like to itch.
And like this whole, all these doctors show up. It's just these automatons in white coats that take her away. And this actually happened before the factory tour because he recognizes them at the factory.
Oh, that's right.
But
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I forgot that Marge.
But he's
Marge
like, yeah.
Gutman.
He's like, he takes her to a special facility in the factory where she'll get the best care. And he's a sly devil. And I do like I generally do like that actor in this role, because I like that he is not, it's more of a smiling benevolence, not like the Joker, but more just this like, hi, how are you? I love you. I'm going to stab you now.
Oh, I love Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes. No, he's great. They take the factory tour and they learn about Cochran basically being a Batman villain. With Dr. all his little, Witch. Yeah, he's got all these like little automatons, stuff like that in the basement. While they're leaving the factory, they notice her dad's car in a building. I'm like, oh my God, they have her dad's car. And Cochran, Kyle Cochran, head of Silver Shamrock, notices that they notice. And is like, all right, well, I got to do something about this. So they go back to the hotel. Chalice goes to try to like call the authorities, but just gets an operator saying like, oh, this call can't be completed. Then that's totally Jamie Lee Curtis. I pay enough attention to recognize her voice.
Yeah.
In that moment. But all the Ed Rooney robots kidnap Ellie, break into the hotel in a terrifying scene, I guess. And I was
scared. I mean, the one thing I think of with this movie is terror.
Yes. And kidnaps them. And then so Chalice pursues them and tries to break into the factory just with all the stealth that a doughy man in flannel can muster.
His sneaking motion literally made me laugh out loud, where he'd kind of put like one arm forward,
yeah,
almost like he's touching the air to make sure it doesn't fall, yeah, over. It's the best way I could describe it. Is
like the lights
hilarious.
Are off.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so good.
Yeah, he's good. And he gets attacked by a couple of the dudes, and he fights them off, and then basically punches through one and finds that it's filled with egg yolks. Like, it just starts bleeding this like yellow stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
and then
do you not know about robotics?
Then he pulls out his hand. It's holding wires, and he breaks from reality. And
yeah, I mean, that modern robotics are 90% wires and egg yolks.
But, so, like, you have all these robots.
Yeah.
Why isn't that your plan?
Wait, what do you mean?
Like, what's this other shit you're doing? You have robots.
Wait, I'm fine. What would the robots do?
Anything. Sell them. Murder people with them, which you have been doing. Like, what do you...
So you're saying the convoluted plan that involves shipping a large piece of the blue sarsen stones that creates Stonehenge,
yes,
over the United States, chipping tiny pieces off, getting scientists to put those tiny pieces into badges, putting those badges on to masks, waiting for those masks to be put onto children, and then playing a mnemonic song that would make those masks go off, turning their brains into bugs and snakes. You're saying that it'd be easier to just have robots kill a bunch of kids? I don't know what kind of world you're living in, mister.
Essentially, yes. I'm just saying, you don't even have to kill the kids. I mean, I guess maybe, because here's the problem. The ultimate goal of what he's setting out to do is never explained. Is never, like...
Do I need a reason? Mr. Kopfer was right, you know. I do love a good joke. And this is the best joke. A joke of the children. But there's a better reason. You don't really know much about Halloween. You thought no further than the strange custom of having your children wear masks, go out begging for candy. This is the explanation. It was the start of the year in our old Celtic lands, and we'll be waiting in our houses of wattles and clay. The barriers would be down, you see, between the real world and the unreal, and the dead might be looking in to sit by our fires of turf. Halloween, the festival of Samhain, which he mispronounces, the last great one, took place 3,000 years ago, when the hills ran red with the blood of animals and children, and then the chalice of sacrifices. It was part of our world, our craft. To us, it was a way of controlling our environments. It's not so different now. It's time again. In the end, we don't decide these things, you know. The planets do. They're in alignment, and it's time again. The world's going to change tonight, Doctor. I'm glad you'll be able to watch it, and happy Halloween. So if that's not a clear explanation of
I do like when, you know, I don't necessarily think that horror movies in particular need to always follow a certain kind of logic and explain everything. They're much scarier when they don't. However, like, if the thing is just he's completely insane, that's terrifying, but it's not very compelling. Because there's no like solid ground to stand on as a viewer. He's just like, why not kill all the children? And I don't know. Like, it just makes it all just bizarre and strange and not in this way that's scary to me. I'm too busy going, wait, what? Then,
well, that's why you got the clear explanation.
That was that what that was?
Well, yeah, because it's a way of controlling our environment. It's not so different now.
Yes.
It's time again. If what are you not following?
It's time for what?
Well, because in the end, we don't decide these things, you know. The planets do.
Right.
I mean, what are you not getting here?
That, okay.
Oh, let's go but back to your fancy robots killing people theory. Yeah,
well, he has been. And that's been effective.
Some kind of Terminator robot that could be from the future and kill people. John, no one would watch that movie.
But why would you go to all the trouble of building all these robots? I mean, people have been like, oh, it's a commentary on... Because this movie is like a cyberpunk thriller, if I want to be honest about it. Because it is about a mega corporation using technology to get into people's brains. And there's one guy, freedom fighter, fighting against it. You can get all Shadowrun about it, too. And there's druids and shit. Yeah, this is a cyberpunk thriller.
Ugh.
But... and there are people that argue that be like, well, there's, you know, there's themes. And there's obvious themes in it about, like, work and the commodification of the workforce, and oh, it's just better if it's just robots and corporations want to just kill you or something like that. Fine.
And maybe in the end, maybe we all wear masks.
Yeah. But just, I don't know, tell a decent story, and this doesn't make any sense.
What do you not get? They're in alignment. It's time again.
Right.
John, the world's going to change.
What's
tonight.
In alignment? Why does the baby have money?
I'm glad you'll be here to watch it, and happy Halloween. What don't you get? I mean, it's clear.
It's right there.
It's clear as the skies in our old Celtic lands.
Yeah. So that's what Cochrane's doing, apparently. He stole a piece. I did, because all you know that the piece of Stonehenge was stolen was that the news flash at the beginning. You just see a TV and it's like, yeah, someone stole Stonehenge. It's weird. And then later, he's showing his diabolical plan to Dr. Beefstew, and he's just like, yeah, look at that. Can you believe we got Stonehenge? You wouldn't believe how we got it here. And then moves on.
Yeah,
and I love that, hanging a lantern on it like that. Like just that, we don't know.
Doesn't
but it's
he
here.
Actually say that's a story for another time?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah. Well, so, yeah. It's like, you wouldn't believe it. Like, this is crazy.
Oh, it's so, yeah. This is the part that I wish was more, because it's fucking bananas that they have a piece of fucking Stonehenge that they're chopping off pieces. It's just, oh God. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. And so, well, obviously, so that's Cochrane lays out his plan, whatever that is. And he's like, well, you need a demonstration. And so he shows him, he's taken the cup for family, the salesman and his family, put them in a room under the guise of like, you're going to be seeing our ads for next year. And has his kid put on one of the masks, plays the thing that's going to play that night on Halloween, which activates whatever it is in the mask and turns the kid's head into mush and snakes and bugs. And that's like, that's awesome. It was scary and unexpected and pretty cool.
Yeah, I never noticed this. I have the laser Wikipedia open here. And it says that it stands for light amplification by stimulating an emission of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the word snake.
Well, it's not a laser. It's magic.
But a laser shot Marge Gutman's face off.
We are saying laser because it's just easier. It's a magic beam.
It was a light amplified by the stimulation and emission of radiation.
Yeah, it wasn't radiation.
That radiation was the glowing radiance that was Marge Gutman. She's also reading Carlos Castaneda book, which is a really weird choice.
I don't know who that is.
He's this weird 60s trippy writer that talked about like doing ayahuasca in like Mexico and like hanging out with like this weird like kind of guru character that taught about astral travel. Yeah, it's a weird choice of book. Maybe that was popular back when the movie was made. For me, watching it in 2018, it's like, what a fucking odd choice.
You know my stance on books. No, thank you. I also like the idea of them testing this out, him and the robots in the big warehouse with all the computer stuff they got there, being like, okay, this takes about like 15 seconds to activate that. Can we get that down to 10? Can we get, because I mean, these kids are going to be watching this pumpkin expecting something.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Like them like workshopping the murder.
There's another big plot point of like the big countdown is for just the same commercial they've been seeing for weeks. Yeah. And that's what the
and then you watch the pumpkin.
Also, how hilarious is the weird like switchboard style computer that controls the
it's the 80s, baby.
Oh, that was like, but also I love that Zap Razdauer knows immediately. Sorry, Dr. Beefstew knows how to run that board to
right.
try to
well,
stop.
Yeah, so they have him tied up and actually wearing a skull mask in a room after after he's watched the family get murdered, basically. And they're going to have him watch the movie as well, which is Halloween is playing. So the scary music from the movie Halloween is playing. He manages to kick out the TV, grab a piece of glass, cut himself free. And to try to thwart their plan, yeah, goes up to this big console, starts pressing buttons like he knows what he's doing.
And it works. Like, he does it really quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. But he stops stuff, and no one, he ends up like rescuing Ellie as well.
He grabs a box of the badges, the Silver
Shamrock.
Yeah,
it's your first time. I didn't figure out what, like, it's just like, hey, I'm going to grab some free masks while I still can.
So he drops them on a bunch of the robots.
But before he does that, what he did is causing all the magic pumpkin, look at the magic pumpkin thing to happen.
Yeah.
And stuff's blowing up, and no one that works there can figure out how to make it stop.
No, see, because
no one else can use the equipment, apparently.
No, that's what I like, though. They're robots. They're not trained to react to that situation.
Fair enough.
I'm not just being Alex argumentative this time. I literally mean, I'm sure they didn't plan it that way. But in that the earlier seeding of these are kind of just clockwork fucking idiots.
So it's a good argument against automation, because if something should come up, robots can't fix it.
Yes. This reminds me of, remember when Itchy and Scratchy got replaced by like Worker and Parasite on The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Like that's a play right here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so they don't know how to, like, do anything other than, like, their job. So when something freaks out, they don't have, like, sentience. Enough.
Right, right.
But so he drops these activated
badges
down on them, and it starts frying their circuitry or whatever, which forms a glowing laser hula hoop around them.
Yeah, because all the TVs are in a ring around them.
And Stonehenge starts glowing, and Cochran gets disintegrated?
I have no idea. But he's like, he sees like the glowing loop happening and kind of sees a beef stew up there and is just like, nice.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He gives him the slow clap.
He gives him
clap.
The like, well done, bro.
Yeah, he does slow golf clap.
And
that was awesome.
Then the laser hits him, but rather than turning his head to mush, he becomes like made out of Ajax or something like that. Like he's all powdery and strange.
Yeah.
And then he just fades out. So...
Well, have you thought that
maybe
this movie exists concurrently with Infinity War, and that was a result of Thanos' snapping? This is the weirdest timed movie ever.
But like, because it was like, why change him into something else? Like, because it's not like he then like exploded or something. Like, I could see if it was like, oh no, and then we went to this prosthetic version of him that bursts. It's just him, and he fades out.
Well, that was the question earlier, like joking around about all the witches in this movie. Was he meant to be some kind of witch or your warlock?
That's the like, only thing I can guess, is that he's just been alive for centuries.
Because that was my thought, is because he said, like when he found that weird clockwork woman that was doing the knitting.
Yeah, the robotic Madame Defarge or whatever.
Yeah, he's like, oh, that's a very expensive piece. I got that for 1775 in Germany. Yeah. Now, I wonder, in a better movie, that he is some kind of, like, pseudo-immortal doing, you know, like, he's been around forever trying to, waiting for this planetary alignment to do this giant ritual sacrifice to get the happy thing that he's going to get. Because, again, doesn't actually say what he's getting. Unless, literally, in his speech where he's using crop health as a metaphor, maybe he just really likes corn.
Yeah, maybe that's it. He's like, corn now sucks, dude. Yeah. I need to get it back. Good old Irish corn. That's my guess.
You don't worry about staple grains nearly enough.
Yeah. I mean, that's my guess, like, particularly having just seen, spoiler alert, Castle Rock, the series Castle Rock, ends on kind of a similar thing where it's like, turns out I'm a billion years old. Blah. And, okay.
I hope the dozers are okay.
They're not. But, or like, I mean, any, what's the other Stephen King? Needful Things, where it's just like, yeah, he's just this malevolent force that's just been around forever. And,
yeah.
And I was like, oh, I have enough power. I should probably murder children with television. Which, oh, think about that. Television is murdering our children, bro. Psh, blew your mind.
Well, no, it literally will blow your mind. There's going to be a magic laser that's made from Stonehenge.
It's not a laser. It's a magic beam.
It's light emitted by the stimulation of, I already forgot
there's
what it
no,
stands
there's
for.
There's no radiation involved. It's just magic.
Light is radiation, John.
Not when it's haven't magic.
You, haven't
this
you ever
is not hard.
Physics?
No. Does that involve books? No.
So, yeah, our villain, who has no goal other than just murder.
Just murdering kids?
But maybe, I did just think about something here. Maybe he is supposed to be like a leprechaun style, I just like fucking with people, like, you know, that kind of spirit, like a Loki.
Right.
Like, maybe that's the whole thing.
I think that's supposed to be kind of thing. But again, like,
done very well,
but that's not fucking with people. That's just murdering their children.
I mean, I suppose if you're an immortal being, that's kind of,
I guess.
I mean, that's like slipping a banana peel to them. Like, ah, you lost your family.
It's not that he has no goal. It's that his goal, I have no idea what his goal is. Now, apparently, we were talking about this before the recording, there is a novelization of this movie. That is actually supposed to be really good and, in fact, was reissued, like, even a couple years after the movie came out by some sci-fi author whose name I did not recognize.
If you buy it, I'll read it.
Yeah, I actually will check it out because it's a book about a movie, not a book.
Because I don't want to do this, but I'm kind of curious. So, like, I feel like if I don't spend money on it,
right,
it doesn't count towards my, like...
Yeah, if I can, I'll see if the library has it or something like that. Because I mean, I've read the first two graphic novels that preceded the Southland Tales. So I'm like, this has got
to
be fun.
That's true. I mean, your commitment to the show is admirable. I mean, I didn't even listen to an episode
which,
yet. And you're doing background research.
Which apropos of this is a little aside. Still thinking about Southland Tales. keep thinking about Southland.
Maybe our first.
I need to watch it.
Maybe
again.
Maybe our first sequel cast where we'll do Southland
Just
Tales
watch it again.
Again
and be like, you know what? It's good now. But his plan is still in motion. Like the TV, the signal's not going to come from the station. It's going to play on TV channels. Well, and so he and Ellie and Dr. Beefstew escape.
Wait, before that, sorry. Keep that thought.
Yeah.
His plan has already succeeded in two time zones.
Basically.
I just want to point that out.
Yeah.
Like, it's 9 p.m. West Coast.
Yeah.
So it's already happened.
Because they've spent a lot of time. There was a little montage of people buying masks in different places.
Exactly. They've established that each time zone is... So we've already had at least one or two time zones of most of the children there's head have exploded and turned into bugs and snakes.
Which, let me back up even from that. And at this point, by this point, Oracle, his redheaded assistant, whatever lady, slowly finding out that they're robots... One of the robots goes and kills her.
Oh, that's right.
Because I guess she knows too much. You're about to murder everybody. Why is this a concern? That
that's
there's
true.
A loose end? No one's going to like, well, they're all wearing those silver shamrock masks. What a coincidence. All right.
Yeah.
But who's the real killer? And there's several things like that where then like he's answering a phone call from, he's like, oh, and sales are through the roof. Stock for the company is super high. That's amazing. Why are you taking that phone call? Who cares? You don't need to pretend that you're not going to murder everybody anymore. But so, yeah, so apparently
I didn't think about that. Why the hell did he kill that lab tech lady?
Yeah. But so,
sorry.
But as far as the movie is concerned, nothing has shown yet. Like there's no, you're absolutely right that would have happened. But as far as you know, in the world of the movie, things are still just,
but why
you know,
show
it's
Ohio
like, well, it's like,
earlier?
Well, it might be, you know, it's like one of those, live things where it's like, you know, the Oscars start at the same time. For everybody, so it's like even though,
but saying that would, I can't believe I'm arguing, but like would be the expectation that children would be up at 1 a.m. or midnight on the East Coast.
Yeah,
because 9 p.m. West Coast is midnight East Coast. No kids up at fucking midnight. Like,
look, this is not my plan. Don't yell at me.
This is your plan, Cochran. I heard your whole speech about corn earlier.
But my favorite thing that happens is so when he's. They're escaping the factory, and he figures out that Ellie's a robot. Ellie starts trying to murder him.
By the way, I was honestly shocked by that.
Yeah.
Because again, realized, haven't seen most of or not all this movie. When that fucking hammer drops, like, oh fuck, Ellie's.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really kind of freaked me out a
but
little bit.
But my favorite sci-fi thing happened where she starts making robot noises as soon as it's discovered that she's a robot.
Totally, yeah.
Like, I love that whenever that happens, where it's like, because he's like torn off an arm or like a hand, like they get into a car accident, and, like her hand has come off like that. And then all of a sudden she's like,
yeah,
before nothing.
I also love that. So the hand's on the car door and then she attacks him and he basically knocks her fucking head off.
Mm-hmm.
Then the end attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the body reattacks.
Which I thought was a little bit, and I was probably looking too much into it, but having just seen the first one again, was a little bit of a nod to like how many times they killed Mike Myers in the first one, where it's like, okay, now we got him. No, he's back again. Now we got him. Now he's back again. That kind of.
Oh, that, I mean, that could be.
I'm and so, I was looking for stuff. So.
No, it's. I mean, obviously, they had Halloween in mind when they were making this film, so it's totally possible.
But so he's already like frantically called his ex-wife and the kids to try to get the kids to not wear the masks.
Again,
and,
couldn't just make up something.
But his wife is like, "Are you drunk?" Which I like that kind of payoff of like very quietly throughout the movie, he's just been a piece of shit drunk, and that like now no one actually believes him.
Yeah.
But then he gets to the gas station, the gas station from the beginning, and calls the mayor of television. Yeah. I have no idea who he's on the phone with. And he's just screaming like, just, I don't care. Say it's a bomb threat. I don't care. Just get it to stop running. And it's like some kids who are also trick or treating at a gas station.
As one does.
As you do. Come in because they want to see the countdown or the giveaway or whatever. Yeah. And are flipping the channel and it goes to, you know, technical difficulties. Next station goes to
wait, John. Before you continue this trend.
Yes.
What were the kids wearing?
The Silver Shamrock.
Why the fuck was Zapp Brazdauer didn't take his goddamn turn around and take
again? Doing the greater good, trying to reach everybody.
But he's already off the phone. Take the. There's children you could save literally within arm's reach.
He is so drunk right now.
Oh, that's true. He is. Yeah,
he was drinking windshield wiper fluid before they came.
Well, no, I mean we've seen him down a six pack. He was drinking a bottle of hooch with that homeless guy earlier.
But so then there's one more station that's just not that starts that's playing the ad. Because I mean this is back in the, you know, there's only three stations, but there's one more station that's still playing the ad. And as you hear the song playing, he's just screaming on the phone like, make it stop. And then the movie ends. So, oh my God, he didn't stop that one station from doing it.
Yeah.
But I still don't understand who he was calling. Like, all the TV stations are controlled by one guy or like one broadcast tower, I guess?
It's really, but it'd be one broadcast tower in one part of one state.
But how would you stop?
Three time zones in.
Yeah.
So you say, three time zones in, you saved one third of the children watching TV within broadcast radius of wherever you made that phone call.
Yeah, and it made me think of the invitation, that, you know, that ending where it's like, you know, oh, it turns out it's all over the place. But I kind of help, but you know, you the sort of bad ending of, oh, I guess the bad guys kind of got away with it.
I like the ending. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
Although I wish they had like an after credits little thing where they showed the corn just being really kick-ass this
really
season.
Awesome.
Because, I mean, I'm not kidding. I never would stop laughing and would watch this movie every year if they had an after credit sequence where it's like quinoa farmers going, this crop is fucking fantastic.
What is going on?
And then they kind of pull away from camera where they're looking like quinoa, and it's three little graves with their children's names on it. Just, wow, this quinoa is fucking great this year.
I'm just also imagining that...
That I didn't just say that? Well, because that was dark.
It's just some guy who's a snake salesman is just rubbing his hands over a pile of money. He's like, haha, nothing but profit for me. He's turning these kids' faces into snakes.
The prophecy has been foretold. I didn't know it had anything to do with Stonehenge, though. That's still pretty weird.
Yeah, so...
And there's a bunch of Stonehenge left, so they could do it again next year.
So it's... Yeah, there's a lot of really neat stuff in this movie. A lot of, like, ideas and a couple of scenes that are really, really cool, but just... It just feels like they belong in a better movie than this one.
Yeah.
It's short. It's only like an hour 30, an hour 40.
I like the third act, or I say that because I know the term three act structure, but I like the tail third of the film.
Yeah.
And there's chunks of it, obviously, that were dumb as shit, but like, I just wish the energy and stupidity and the fun of the last chunk was somehow in that first bit. Cause like, I did like the garbage bag of the hero, but I don't like they either didn't turn into or away from it enough. Like it was like this kind of weird middle line where it's like,
well, but at the same time, I kind of like that because it kind of hits the reveal at the end that like, oh yeah, no, he is just this drunken piece of shit. Whereas his ex-wife isn't believing him or whatever. I think that kind of made that seem a little bit more of a surprise, but it's not compelling for most of it. And it's not the last act does kind of go crazy. All I'm thinking of right now is Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2, which is phenomenal in how terrible it is. And it's Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 is obviously a sequel. And the main character of Silent Deadly Night 2 is the brother of the villain of Part 1, and he's just retelling the story of Part 1. So it's a clip show for the first movie.
Whoa.
And then...
Really?
And then, yeah, basically. And then the last act is him, like, it turns out he's a psychopath too. And his psychopathic rage thing is insane. And, like, you're like, what is happening? This is dumb and ridiculous. And it was so much fun. And that's kind of how this felt, where it's just like this, like, plotting, like, okay, this, oh my God, laser just zapped this lady's face. Okay, now back to this. And, oh, why is, okay. Then it just goes crazy. But it just wasn't, like, compelling all the way through.
Yeah.
And the payoff at the end, like, I don't know. I was too busy going, wait, what? To actually
no,
be.
No, I like the end. I like a dark ending, especially in a horror movie. Sure. Like, that's fun. I just wish this was better. Like, it's good. Like, I like parts of, like, it's the batshit stuff sticks with me. Like, yeah. That's great, but there's a lot of, you know what I wish this movie were? Is an episode of MST3K. Mm-hmm. If this were Mystery Science Theater 3000, like, the batshit stuff would be better, but I'll never say this about anything I'm involved with again. This movie's better just listen to us talk about it than actually, like, because it's just, it's such, like, conceptually, there's so many cool parts, but it's like, that's kind of better just in thought than
Read the novelization. Like, I'll never say that about a movie, but read the novelization.
Yeah, I'll just stand behind you and then dramatically hit a synth note on every third page. And then it'll be exactly like watching the movie. So I say, you know, just re-listen to this podcast. You don't have to watch this.
It's a weird one.
Or maybe watch it. I don't know. Watch it in, like...
That's your problem. You figure it out.
Yeah, just
live, like, your own life.
Yeah, exactly. What the fuck are you listening to me for? I mean, wait, I take it back. Keep listening to us. Love us. Love us. That's what we're here for. All right, so Season of the Witch. Let's move on to another movie that probably has equal amounts of witchcraft. John, what are we watching next time?
Mandy. The current new release as of this recording, but also available for home viewing on any number of streaming sites. Directed by... Panos Cosmatos, whose previous works include Beyond the Black Rainbow, which I just watched and is bonkers. It's a little bit like David Cronenberg meets Altered States meets a very, very boring movie that looked pretty and had a cool soundtrack. But this has Nicolas Cage. This has a cult. This has, if you've seen the trailer at all, It just looks bonkers.
Yeah, and it's Nicolas Cage covered in blood on the front picture. So, yeah, sounds fun.
And I know we just did a Cage, but we can do another Cage. There's like, it's like, once you pop, you can't stop, right?
Yeah. And also, we're doing weird horror movies and horror-related stuff for October, and there's like 6 horror movies I've ever liked. So there's slim pickings from the Alex side. So it sounds good.
Here's a quick bonus episode. Killer Clowns from Outer Space. It's great. Watch it.
Yeah.
All right. Boom. Now we're doing Mandy.
Oh, wait, I need to add my spot. Man, this movie doesn't make a lot of sense. That guy's kind of attractive. That clown has weird teeth. Okay, good. Yeah. There was
those clowns are so frightening to this day. I still get very upset by them.
It is, but boy, can we not do an hour on it.
Oh no. I mean, what else, what can you say about it?
That's about it. So yeah, we're gonna watch Mandy, and we will do that. You can find us on the Facebook. We have a Facebook page, John Alex Hate Stuff. Rate, review, like, subscribe, do the things that you have to do to podcasts, because that'd be fun for us, because then people would listen.
Please do.
That's it. Bye.
Bye.